Good evening. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 674, November the 5th, 1984. The elections will have come and gone by the time most of you receive this broadcast, copies of this broadcast, and I'm not discouraged by the fact that Ronald Reagan could win the election again. All I have to do is look around and see the way people accept so little out of their lives that he's the appropriate leader for what people really expect of themselves and of their own country. Leslie Stahl was on CBS this morning discussing the role of the news media and the campaign of 1984, and she said that she did one news report on Reagan standing in a polluted area that was very much in need of being cleaned up, and the environmentalists were attacking him. And he goes out there and acts as if he's in favor of the cleanup and the environment. And this piece that she wrote was very contradictory of his policies, and she was sure she'd never be allowed in the White House or with the press corps again. Much to her surprise, the White House spokesman, one of them, Larry Speaks, or another one, called her up and said, "That was a great bit of reporting you did yesterday. It's wonderful." And she said, "What do you mean? Aren't you angry?" He said, "Of course not." He said, "Nobody cares what you say." He said, "They just see the president out there so that it doesn't matter what you write or do. They have an image, and we give them that image." And she was saying that in some respects, the media wasn't negligent, but she's just one of the few that did even have a small piece of criticism of the president during this entire campaign. If prostitution ever became illegal in this country, they'd have to lock up all the TV reporters and announcers and poll takers and send them off to jail, people like Marvin Kalb and David Hartman and all of them. I don't have to run it down. This is a society that has given away its rights. It's had every chance to protect them, and it actually delivers them over to the masters very obediently. That is the theme of the plays of Samuel Beckett on slave and master, and that the slave needs his master as much as the master needs the slave. And it's a relationship between the two that has always existed and always will. And the few of us that are on the outside of it fighting to expose these various truths and separate them from lies must communicate with other people, and only those people who also want to know the truth. It's very destructive to sit and worry about what other people are thinking or doing. We must stay with those who go forward and make some kind of a wedge, small or otherwise, it doesn't matter, in trying to criticize the overt lies that are being put on us, to control our minds, our society, planet Earth, space stations, and so forth. You have to be ever vigilant, and it doesn't end with any single election. Whether the Democrats or Republicans won, you'd have to be just as vigilant. And my work won't stop because Ronald Reagan is in, and it will stay at the same pace as it always has. I'm going to talk about the murder of Mrs. Gandhi, and I may take a long route. It may take 55 minutes to build up just to her assassination, but it may be shorter than that. We'll get on to the murder of Mrs. Gandhi. It's a difficult subject, and I don't want to offend any particular people, the Sikhs or the Hindus, in this matter, but just express my views based upon what our government has done in the past and what it appears they have done one more time. The United States is an active participant in divisiveness of every factor. So when you get Muslims, Hindu, Sikh, and other factors, they are great at playing those against each other, and this was part of a large plan that Adolf Hitler spelled out when he was planning the Thousand-Year Reich. The United States is not interested in development of third world or poor or social or economic stability. You should be recognizing that by now. And this is a country that needs that kind of care and attention. The United States punishes people and countries who don't obey when they're told to take orders from the Pentagon. And we've seen that over and over again. And Mrs. Gandhi was not obeying George Bush or Ronald Reagan, and she refused to take orders from the Pentagon. The United States has a history of taking over democratically elected countries. They don't give a bean about that, and they put in fascist dictatorships in replace of those elections whenever they can have a chance, and then those are almost impossible to overthrow. Greece did overthrow their military dictatorship, but very few countries are able to do such a thing. Mrs. Gandhi didn't trust Ronald Reagan's administration. She didn't trust George Bush. And she spoke about that, and she had reason not to. And, of course, they didn't want her vocalizing that too much. The United States Army has been arming Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. We want to control the sea over there, the ports to put atomic weapons and warheads. And she opposed that and felt that they were infringing upon their territory, whereas the United States intends to cover everything from Japan over to the Middle East and around the world and make a net around the world for their eventual war against the Soviet Union. And George Bush tried to make a deal with Mrs. Gandhi that if she would go against the Soviet Union and attack the entry into Afghanistan, then they would be more kind to her, while they, meantime, were giving all these weapons and airplanes to Pakistan, and she wouldn't go along with that. She wasn't a perfect lady. Whoever advised her to go into the Holy Temple of the Sikhs, whoever gave her that advice was her enemy, not her friend. And that is where the trouble began. They set her up for the kill because it would follow that if you broke this chanting that has been going on for hundreds of years, anyone who did that would automatically be killed. So if you could get her to attack the area, to set up a provocation, you could almost deliver India to the United States because you would have a confused issue. Your death warrant is signed, and then you go on in and take this huge country known as India, just as at the time of the John Kennedy assassination, when you have a coup and you take all of America, you set up people like Bobby Kennedy investigating organized crime, or John Kennedy aborting the Bay of Pigs invasion, and assure his murder, a vengeance murder, to conceal a long-range plan to take control of American policy. All of this has been done before, and I'll get more to Mrs. Gandhi and the specifics in a moment. Now, I usually begin the program with what happened this time last year or 2 years ago, but there are so many items that pertain to what we were sharing on the radio last year and 2 years ago, current in the news today, bubbling over today, and leading to Mrs. Gandhi, that I'm going to spend a great deal of time or just mention them to you now and take each one of these items that is current, not what we talked about last year, the year before, but the current article. In the next weeks, I'll be going into the details, but I want to mention the topics. In November, the first week of November of 1982, 2 years back, there were three main areas that I was hitting at. One was Edwin Wilson and George Bush, Task Force 157, and the CIA murders. The assassination teams, and Bush was director of the CIA only a year and 3 months, but he had a very heavy role in particular murders and assassinations that took place when he was CIA director. And in November of 82, I was talking about that. Now, in April of 1984, George Bush made a visit to India and aggravated Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, making these deals or bargains that I'm going into detail with you in a little while. In June 84, Counter Spy magazine came out with an article by John Kelly on the scandal that I haven't had time to cover yet on this program, on Ronald Rewald and the CIA offices in Hawaii and their influences in many countries. And this article on Rewald goes into, briefly mentions the holy money that was sent to India, the India funds, to not only destabilize India, but for cash flight capital to come out of India, I guess knowing that the CIA is getting ready to destabilize it, similar to what Hitler and the Japanese emperor did and the powers that be in Europe. They took the flight capital out so they could use it later, or Trujillo took his money to Swiss banks and Perón took their money to Swiss banks. The flight capital was to be taken out of India and put into American banks by way of the CIA. So while they're destabilizing, they are removing the cash. The country can't ever build itself if you don't have capital there or people investing in their own country or caring about their own country. And we've seen the pattern of these dictatorships working with Hitler, working with the United States, where when they know that the system's going to come apart, the leaders can either be killed or step aside, And those people controlling the purse and the banks have their money somewhere else. So the counter-spy article briefly goes into, and I'll do more, on the Indian funds and how the role of the CIA. In October of 1984, this last month, Jack Anderson has connections, which he's bringing up, between George Bush, when he was CIA director from 1976-1977, with Mr. Rewald, Ronald Rewald, R-E-W-A-L-D, and the Lynx. So Bush is active with Rewald. Rewald is putting money into the ashrams and the holy temples in India. Of course, not identifying the Schott article. Bush is there just before Mrs. Gandhi is provoked by the situation in the Golden Temple. And just a year ago, I was 2 years ago, was talking about the role of Bush and Edwin Wilson and that task force that Henry Kissinger was their boss. And, of course, Kissinger runs the Pakistan operation with Mr. Zia. He helped plan the murder of Bhutto and put in Zia, who's now arming to the hilt and arming the Golden Temple for the Sikhs to aggravate Mrs. Gandhi, to shape her up. So Kissinger was the boss of Edwin Wilson and Robert Keith Gray in Task Force 157, Gray's office representing and close to Paul Laxalt and William Casey and so forth. And 2 years ago, I was talking about that. Secondly, I was talking on that broadcast about SS Major Friedrich Burkhard and SS Brigadier General Franz A. Sieks, S-I-X, and how the Green Berets were patterned after the Hitler armies, the special armies, that were the Nazi troops, and they formed the Green Berets in North Carolina, patterned after Hitler's troops, and very active in the special operations, taking over from the regular army, an army behind the army that can do the dirty work and the killing. And when Congress says you can't have a war, then the special forces come in and make the war. And Ronald Reagan lauds what he calls the freedom fighters who were brought here from Nazi Germany to set up a special operation to do what the established congressman won't allow. And this is what happened in Nicaragua with the troops discovered there, the CIA troops, in the booklets. Now, in the newspaper, just the past few weeks, and for many, many articles, I didn't realize how many until I stacked them all up, there were reports of that CIA manual that turned out to go back not just to Nicaragua, back to North Vietnam, to South Vietnam, rather, and the war in Southeast Asia. A story in the newspaper how the Green Berets were formed by in Fort Bragg, and their operations employ this manual. The manual, I'm sure they have many of them, on how to neutralize, how to kill, how to hire criminals, how to assassinate public officials, how to make martyrs of your own team. Well, the newspaper this week had the story of this booklet coming back just this past week to the special forces that I talked about 2 years ago, that this is standard operating procedure, and is again, Reagan calls that the freedom fighters. 2 years ago, I was talking about Michael Ledeen, the propagandist from the Georgetown Center of Strategic Studies, and his connections to Licio Gelli, the Nazi Gestapo leader of Hitler, of Mussolini's, the equivalent of the Gestapo, the secret police, the police force of Mussolini. And Licio Gelli is the man who tried to have coups, many coups, in Italy, part of the P2 operation, the Masonic Lodge, who fled to Argentina. And the relationship of Michael Ledeen from Georgetown and Claire Sterling, particularly Michael Ledeen, down to Licio Gelli, and in the past year, there have been documents of the relationship of the P2 to Ronald Reagan's administration. We've talked about that, Gelli attending his inauguration, and through Michael Sindona with Richard Nixon. Now, the Michael Ledeen connections that I talked about 2 years ago come in the news again in the last few weeks in several forms. One is an article from People's World, November 3rd, 1984, that I will share with you soon at great length. It's by Carl Blois, and it's about the connections of Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen to a man named Paul Bernard Henze, H-E-N-Z-E. He was the former station chief in Turkey from 1958 to 1959 from the CIA, and from 1974 to 1977 when George Bush was his boss. And he worked with Aja in Turkey. Aja was from the Grey Wolves, the Nazi mafia connections, the neo-fascist connections. And after Aja murdered a journalist in Turkey, he asked the CIA, "What is my next assignment?" And he was released from jail and given large amounts of money and ends up in front of the Vatican, where he takes some shots at Pope John Paul II. Now, this is important because they have twisted for several years this story about the plans of the Bulgarians to kill the Pope. The original intention, of course, was to get a holy war where the Antichrist, the Bulgarian, shoots at this holy man. And the whole thing has been strung together with coaching and coaching by Claire Sterling and Ladine and this CIA person, Paul Bernard Hentz. He and Claire Sterling have written books on the shooting of the Pope. Now, the People's World has the connections of the station chief in Turkey, and again, he worked under George Bush. Another article in the San Francisco Chronicle, November the 4th, yesterday, on how the judge is dropping the charges, the allegations pushed by Claire Sterling and Ladine that Aja also wanted to kill Lech Walesa. The article says Aja admitted he lied about the alleged plot to kill Walesa, and while the judge is saying he admitted he lied, Claire Sterling is on Good Morning America with David Hartman and other television shows, and I'm sure radio all around the country, pushing her book and Hentz's book on the Bulgarian plot, the communist plot to kill the Pope, the Antichrist, killing the holy man. And the judge is throwing out part of this because it's a total lie, and 50% of the defendants in this case are Nazi mafia gray wolves, and then they throw in a few Bulgarians for the getaway. It'll be interesting to see how that develops. But again, this is the Cold War, this 1984, and I was talking about it in 1982 with their links going back to Licio Gelli and the Nazis. Another story this past week, October 23rd, 1984, had to do with the anniversary of the Grenada invasion. And I've mentioned this before, Michael Ladine, the senior fellow at Georgetown University Center for Strategic and International Studies, has 35,000 pounds of papers of Maurice Bishop, and his name is everywhere in the news deciding on the communist part of Maurice Bishop. Not Bishop going to William Clark and the National Security Council and wanting to get along with the United States, being forced to work with the Soviet Union because we won't get them a nickel for an airport where we're now putting in $60 or $70 million into Grenada and controlling the entire country. So Ladine's name was mentioned many times through the years, but 2 years ago this week, and he is a part with Claire Sterling of the Aja story, which is a total lie, and with the disinformation on how dangerous Grenada was under Maurice Bishop. Now, it was a year ago. Those three were 2 years ago. A year ago, I was talking about the long plans for the Grenada assassination in Central America and the use of the CIA in 1980, the murder of Walter Rodney in Guyana, the attempted murder of Grenada's Prime Minister Bishop in June of 1980. 3 years later, they got him. The CIA murder in the Philippines of Claro M. Recto, who was running against Marcos. You hear a lot about Benigno Aquino, but not much about Mr. Recto, a formidable opponent, not handpicked by the CIA. They liked Mr. Aquino to stir up problems there. He was handpicked and actually worked for the CIA. And then I talked about the preparations for the taking of Grenada and the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffat, and that was under the direction of CIA Director George Bush. I was talking last year about the importance of the military getting their clout down there in Central America, taking the invasion to scare all the other countries, Nicaragua or any of those that want to go off on their own. We pretty much control Costa Rica and El Salvador, but we could invade Cuba and Nicaragua, and I was talking about that just 1 year ago now. And in that time, I explained in the past year about Grenada, how from 1979, when the coup was being planned, Sir Eric Gary had come to the United States, how it took several years to arrange the murder of Mr. Maurice Bishop, and now Sir Eric Gary is ready to come back and take over the government of Grenada. Now, that was the major political leader of 1983, Maurice Bishop. This year, in 1984, it's Indira Gandhi. Next year, it will either be the Prime Minister of New Zealand or Mr. Papandreou from Greece, or the President of Mexico, who won't go along with our Contadora. You wait and see, and within a very few months, save your articles on Greece, New Zealand, and Mexico, and you'll know the hit for 1985, the next country that we're going to overthrow. We have a very good time schedule, and it's very easy to figure out which way they're moving if you carefully read the newspapers. There was a movie on Channel 9 this week out here on public broadcasting on the history of Reinhard Gehlen. And they were saying Reinhard Gehlen, for those of you who don't know, was the chief of the Eastern Intelligence for Adolf Hitler and then came to this country to form the CIA. And what they were saying on the program was that 90% of all the information Reinhard Gehlen had, and the BND, the German intelligence, and evidently the CIA, comes from reading the newspapers, that they can pick up their information. And the same goes for us. If you read your newspapers properly, as you know I have done, and share it with you, you can then see the next step, because it is all in the paper, not only as a source of a so-called news story, but they want to give a message to their teams on how to operate and where to go. Now, unfortunately, I can't give the source of information I usually do of what was going to happen in India. I can't tell you this because it happened as a social conversation when I was in Los Angeles, but involved a friend of mine who made comments about a particular newspaper person who was changing positions to go to India. And this person in the American media is very high up. And I knew immediately then that we were going to be involved because of the transfer of particular person, and there may be many others. I knew America would be involved in the middle of India conflict after January. I didn't know what happened now, but I told several people who are interested in preserving the Greek government and a friend whose son-in-law happens to be from India that they can look for trouble in January or right after the elections because of a placement of certain people so strategic that America intends to be there. And it's, people may say, well, that isn't accurate. How can you figure that? I knew by the very piece of information that was passed on to me that India would be in the news, not as soon as I expected, but certainly in the news. So a year ago, I was talking about Grenada. Now we go to today and the past events, the assassination of the year now in October 1984, the assassination team in power in India, and not visible. They'll let the factions fight each other. But this is what is going on in India right now, is the role of destabilizing that area and making sure that everyone agreeable with our fleets being there behave the way they should. And I'm sure they can pressure Mrs. Gandhi's son to go along with this. Now, the political murders, before I get to Mrs. Gandhi now, and the news of political murders is everywhere in the news. I mentioned when my first published article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? I said the next book I wanted to write was Murderville, USA. That was in 1972. I could write an encyclopedia now. But I want to run down just a few articles about murders simultaneously with the Gandhi murder to get the framework of what was happening or the things that were in the newspaper, because it's hard to absorb so much information. Even with all my files and cross-filing, I'm sure that you just can't pick it up, put it down, and relate it in any context the way the material is coming out, unless you make a hard effort to do it. Now, so I want to run down just a few articles on murders with you and share those now. First was a story that came out in People's World October 20th by Mr. Cooper and a Mr. Allen. Political murders spread, U.S. death squads. I was interested in that because I've never seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, many of you are researchers and journalists and people writing books, taking these broadcasts. Have you ever seen in an American newspaper a headline story suggesting that there are death squads in the United States? I've had this on the air for many, many years, but I'm not familiar with seeing it in the press. Now, these people were writing about two recent murders that happened, one directed from Taiwan. This is a journalist by the name of Henry Liu, L-I-U. He was writing a biography of Chang, and he was gunned down in San Francisco. Out of Taiwan comes the World Anti-Communist League. General John Singlaub is now chairman of it. He's on the board of Western Goals, and I've done endless hours of the relationship of Western Goals to Los Angeles Police Department and other police departments, but this is particularly in California, so it's timely because of the network of intelligence around here. I'm going to do details on the murder of Henry Liu, and there are suggestions of the direction of him, critical of the regime down there and the son of Chang, who runs Taiwan, how he was gunned down in San Francisco. The second article is called Vietnam Directs the Murder of Professor Klaske Cooperman, K-L-A-S-S-K-E Cooperman, just like it sounds. He was a professor from Cal State, Fullerton, California. He was killed, allegedly by a student, but the lawyers representing him linked to Watergate, and there's a new article link called Watergate Premier Key Link, and the links to Robert Mardian and the Justice Department to the murder of Cooperman and the defense of the person who killed him. The excuses that they were taking gun courses and clinging guns. But this goes right back to Robert Mardian, who at the time of Watergate arrest was active with G. Gordon Liddy and the Justice Department. Mardian was down in the archives in Washington watching the Gestapo pictures of Adolf Hitler. Like Liddy, he was allegedly a person who was interested in Nazism. And now back from Watergate, where he was one of the high-up men in the Justice Department under John Mitchell, there are connections to the murder of a professor at Cal State, and the other is to a writer, a journalist in San Francisco with the links to Taiwan. So that Taiwan and South Korea can have people in this country, just as the Philippines have in this country, who kill people here and get away with it. The point is that the Justice Department lets them off. The death squad is only part of the story. The assassins don't go to jail for life. They're not, most of the time the charges are dropped. And that's the point, is that the killers work with the judicial system and have the approval of the police and of the authorities in California. As a matter of fact, in the case of the journalist in San Francisco, the family has hired an attorney to keep track of the police investigation, that you need an attorney of your own and don't depend on the police. Somebody is getting smart in this country that there are death squads and there are links. The other article that I referred to, the counter-spy article on the Rewald case and the CIA, that article makes the links of Watergate again. A Jack Kandischi, K-I-N-D-I-S-C-H-I, who's station chief in Hawaii, the CIA station chief, who used the cover of Robert Mullen and Company. Well, Robert Mullen and Company is a public relations firm that hired E. Howard Hunt and works with, Hunt works, of course, with William Buckley. They're very, very close. And Douglas Caddy, who formed Young Americans for Freedom with Buckley, headed that public relations firm. He still might, the Robert Mullen. So the CIA station group that were sending money out of India and sending money to the ashrams in the churches is linked through counter-spy to Mullen Associates in Washington, D.C., the group that not only gave us the Watergate entry experience at the time of the elections that fouled up the American electoral processes in 1972 and caused a president to resign, but they were part of the cover-up, including the murder of Dorothy Hunt and a lot of other 30 or 40 primary Watergate witnesses. So there are Watergate links to the murder of a professor in California and Watergate links to a company of the CIA that is channeling funds through their offices in India and out of India that are both associated with George Bush. We'll take a one-minute break now. This is a long road to Mrs. Gandhi, but it all relates to Mrs. Gandhi and our vice president and the intelligence community and the murdering that is going on.